Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kufis and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Men for the Win is sponsored by The Grand Group with Edina Realty. Are you looking to purchase a new home in the Twin Cities area? Or perhaps you're trying to sell your current home? Whether you're upsizing or downsizing, The Grand Group with Edina Realty will meet all of your housing needs. Contact The Grand Group by emailing The Gran, that's G-R-A-N, group, at edinarealty.com, or call them by phone at 612-817-8751. The Grand Group with Edina Realty, 7-time Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine Super Agent Award winners.
On this episode, David and Dan recap all the happenings at Twins Spring Training 2023. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win. My name is David Kufis. With me, as always, is Dan Thompson. The Twins have officially started their slate of spring training games. They got split squad games. Some of the games are on TV. Dan, I got to tell you, watching these games makes me long for our normal format. I kind of miss having that structure. Now I feel like we're just kind of keeping it loose and light.
Speaking of keeping it light, David, how's your egg toss? Can you throw an egg at a distance and have somebody else catch it?
You know, I got to be honest, Dan, I would feel much more confident catching than throwing.
Well, did you see, the Twins did this competition, so they, apparently this is part of Rocco Baldelli's managerial system, right? It's to just throw eggs back and
lots
forth.
Lots of naps and egg tosses, Dan. He takes all of his coaching cues from Gordon Bombay, basically.
That's right. They do that in the movie. It's a classic moment. Passing it back and forth. What does he say? He has like a phrase that goes with that, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He says, it's not if you can catch an egg, you can catch a pot. That's definitely not.
That's a dodge a wrench, dodge a ball. That's not the egg. Anyway, he's got something that he says about that, being gentle and touch, but you accept the pass or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, but the best of this was Kyle Garlick, of course, among his many, because he can mash taters and he can mash lefties, and now he can apparently catch and throw eggs at a distance.
Any sort of food pun, he's your guy, Dan. The biggest takeaway, did you see the picture of the first base coach for the Twins?
I can't say
that
I did.
That guy looks, so Conger, the first base coach, Hank Conger for the Twins, he looked in way better shape than I remember him looking at first base. Like he was in like shorts and
best
like a cutoff t-shirt.
Life,
I was
David.
Like,
best shape okay. of his life.
Best shape of his life. The first base coach. That's who we're, you know which base coach I hope is in the best shape of his life, man? Tommy Watkins at third base.
Windmill or stop sign. What was that? Anyway.
Hands up or windmill. Hands up. Those are your options. Watkins all offseason, he was doing burpees with his hands up or windmill. That's all he should have been doing. And then watching film and like counting how long it takes guys to throw the ball into home plate.
Oh my gosh. Well, you saw it. Rocco mentioned the best shape of his life. I wonder if maybe he's a listener. Do we dare hope?
He must be. You know that last season Rocco was like, I wonder what these guys think we're gonna do, and that's what my target is gonna be.
Well, we were so right about Miguel Sano, so what a shame. Where is, you know what, Miguel has landed nowhere, and I think that is sad.
Well, I assume he'd go to Japan where he can just crank homers. Yeah,
let's hope so.
Speaking of faces that you wouldn't think would be around the Twins any longer, at the request of Twins manager Rocco Baldelli, Rocco gives a call to Paul Molitor, the guy whose job he took, for those of you who don't remember, and asked him, hey man, our team sucks at base running. Do you think you could come help us out a little bit?
Now, don't come manage the team. We can't do that, Paul. But can you teach him how to base run a little bit better? How awkward. Like, isn't that weird?
I can't decide if it's like Paul Molitor is just that humble of a human, or like, is he coming back out of spite and he's teaching them how to run it poorly? You know,
like if you're having, let's say you were cooking your wife a lovely dinner, but you know, the dessert was really holding you up. Like you couldn't figure out how to get the souffle. So you called an ex-girlfriend to come over and make the souffle. Like, would that be like, is that what's happening here?
I was trying to think if it would make more sense in the analogy if I call an ex-girlfriend or if I call one of her ex-boyfriends.
Maybe that would be,
I'm not even sure what.
There's an awkwardness to the situation, but apparently Paul rises above. So good for Paul.
Yeah, if you read the article, I think it was Hayes at The Athletic who wrote the article, but he was talking about how Paul stayed quiet and let the real coaches, for lack of a better term, sort of say their piece and then just talked when he felt there was a good opportunity, which I think is great. But like, for me, if I were in his shoes and I got asked to come back to the team, I would expect to be leading that, right? Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'll just sit on the sidelines. It's like, no, I'm going to take charge here. But so I'm guessing he's doing whatever Rocco has requested he do.
Again, Rocco's Jedi mind tricks here of getting people to do what he wants. Because obviously, for baseball fans who may not have remembered Paul Molitor, he was a great base runner, stole 504 bases in his career. Obviously, a 3,000 hit guy, a batting average over 300. So what a great player, maybe not the best manager.
It's just funny because most of the time when you see a managerial change, they'll go from like a really soft-spoken guy to like a really like bombastic, you know, really outgoing, enthusiastic guy. And like, I wouldn't say that the shift from Molitor to Rocco, like, that's a pretty small incremental upgrade, you know. And to be honest, if I had to see one of them get mad, I would think that Molitor could do a better job of being upset than Rocco can.
That's what, do you think he gesticulates as much as Rocco does? Yeah. Like, that would be, I would love to see a side-by-side of those two, like, kicking dirt on the plate and speaking very loudly at the umpire behind home plate.
Well, Dan, I think we have talked about random elements of Twins camp enough here. We're going to jump in. We're going to follow up a little bit on our rules discussion from last episode with the shift ban and then the pitch clock. And then we're also going to talk about a rash of injuries that have come upon the Twins. I say that sort of in jest because there have been a couple of injuries, but not like this large swath. And then we're going to talk about what may be the first time in history, Dan, a healthy Twins rotation to start the season.
I know, go figure. But lots of positional players with questions. So we'll get to these things. First off, so we should start with the shift ban follow-up because I think, you know, baseball finds a way. It's like that Jurassic Park line, right? Like, they're finding a way, and now they're moving left fielders into shallow right. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. So Kepler gets up to the plate against the Red Sox. They shifted Kepler in the most logical way you can in the current rule set, meaning that you have the first baseman and then you have the second baseman playing basically right in the middle between first and second base. You have the shortstop as close to the second base bag as possible, and then the third baseman playing where the shortstop would normally play. Now, that I would expect to see most teams do when you're going up against a left-handed pull hitter. Now, the extreme case was also represented when Joey Gallo gets up to the plate, and the Red Sox actually take their left fielder and place him in right field where typically the shortstop or second baseman would play last season during a shift. Now, granted, we talked about this before. This is certainly an option that teams can do. They talked about it in the rules set. They said, yes, they can circumvent the rule in this way. However, if Gallo can figure out how to get that ball down the left field line, Dan, he's not a slow guy. I think that's an inside the park home run.
It is. It again points to the ludicrousness of banning the shift in the first place if you're not going to also ban the outfield shift. Like, I mean, you almost have to like draw circles on the field of where guys can start, honestly. Or do you, I mean, I'm kind of waiting for the line in the dirt that shows just where a guy can be. Like, I don't, again, it's still so silly, but the problem that is going to persist for Max Kepler and Joey Gallo, like, teams are going to keep doing this to them, I think, until they prove that they can hit otherwise.
That's really the question. And especially in that extreme circumstance, I'm curious how often we'll see that during the regular season. I don't see it happening all that often because, again, it's a very, very high risk play. And especially early in a game, I think you're probably more likely to see it than late in the game.
Maybe, but at the same time, like, the reward of this, of getting the guy out, I'm sure the data is there. You're right. I'm sure teams also are just trying it out in spring training just to see what it looks like. But at the end of the day, I mean, if the data supports it in spring training, I don't see why they wouldn't do it in the regular season.
It's a fair point. I'm excited to see how it happens. But until the regular season hits, Dan, spring training games, you got to take it with a grain of salt. And you sort of saw this on Twins Twitter when Emilio Pagan had his outing where he just got absolutely rocked. And guys are like, well, you got to balance these things. You know, spring training stats really don't mean anything, but Pagan is bad. It's like, no, both of those things can be true.
Right. It's like, you know, football in the preseason, it's kind of the same deal. Teams are trying things out. The full commitment is not quite in it. Their mind's not totally on the game in that way, I suppose.
Yes.
Let's talk about the pitch clock follow-up. So obviously this has really shaved some time off. Games are now averaging 2.5 hours, which is, I think, 20 minutes shorter than the average game last year, if not a little bit more.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. And I do want to say the first game that we saw with the pitch clock, the way that the game was framed, you could see just the clock very, very present on the left-hand side of the screen. So you have the batter's box and right to the left, you can see just this giant clock. And honestly, Dan, it gave me this feeling in my stomach where everything just clenched. And I'm like, this doesn't look right. This doesn't look right. This can't be the case. And so I'm sort of a hypocrite in this way because I tweeted out that I'm like, well, I think I like the increased pace of play, but I really, really don't want to see that clock, Dan.
Well, we also don't want to see situations where it's a key moment, it's a full count, and then the batter's not ready or something, and then that moment becomes a forced walk because of the extra strike, or I guess either way, depending on how that situation goes. That is a little bit frustrating, and I guess that's why it's good that they're doing it in spring training and guys are going to get used to it. I just wish there was like some clause, like, but not with a full count or something like that, but you know, I get that they can't do that.
Yeah, like we said, it wouldn't surprise me if there were all of a sudden these sort of limitations in the ninth inning, or you know, things like that. But I do want to give a quick shout out to Bally Sports North, who I don't think is going to exist much longer. I don't quite understand everything that's happening. Like, I'm just hoping I have a way to watch the Twins this season. But I do want to give a shout out to whoever designed the pitch clock presentation. It's really ingenious. So you have the little field that shows who's on base. And then what happens is at the 8 second mark in the middle of the diamond, the clock shows you 8, and then it gives you the countdown. So it's only present at the 8 second mark, which is when the batter has to be ready. And so you only see the clock when it matters, and it's very unobtrusive, right? It's very, you can see it if you want to, but it's not like, hey, what's this big thing on the screen?
You know, for all the times that we've criticized Bally Sports North, this is maybe one of the first times we've praised them, because there's times when like the Twins get the C team, you know, like when, like in September, yes, when the Vikings are on and maybe, you know, the Timberwolves or somebody, whatever, somebody has a game. So yeah, good on Bally Sports if they even exist any longer. I don't know how, maybe what baseball's gonna do, just put a camera in the center field, zoom in a little bit, and then that's how we'll watch the game or something. Anyway, so I don't know. I am curious to see how this plays out, but I don't think that having a shorter baseball game is really going to be a bad thing.
No, I do wonder though, and there's been some discussion about this. Could you remove the seventh inning last call at baseball games because games are that much shorter? Maybe I'm misunderstanding how that timeline works, right? Because your goal is you want guys to sober up before they go home. So maybe you have to have it even earlier.
I thought it was also just so that those people who are working concession stands can be done and wrapped up and go home at a reasonable time, too.
Oh, that is a much more optimistic take than mine.
I suppose that will kind of work itself through, but maybe we'll have to see. Well, next time we're at Target Field together, we can ask around. We can try to get that beer in the eighth inning and see if they're there. Well, there are a couple other things you have here. If you wanted to, something about Max Scherzer, you haven't even told me. You're keeping this a secret from me.
Well, so it's interesting. So there's a few different elements to this pitch clock because the batter can only call time once in an at bat. And so pitchers are going to try and find a way to exploit this. Max Scherzer, obviously at the forefront. He always tends to be the guy at the forefront of a lot of these things. But so what he's been doing is he holds ready and he waits for the batter to show himself ready. And then he just waits. He just sits there and he waits. Huh. And he waits until the last possible moment. And what he's having happen, the batter calls time. Okay, well, that's your one timeout. So now the rest of the at bat, Scherzer just holds the ball for like the solid 15 seconds before tossing it. And like baseball is all about timing, right? Guys mess with their toe taps, their leg kicks, just to get their timing right. And so if you have a guy who can really control that at bat, knowing exactly when the ball is going to be thrown, and there's nothing that you can do about it, that gives a lot of power to the pitchers, Dan.
And so the idea, I guess, is that he still is getting kind of the same impact of holding the ball for, I guess I'm struggling to see how that gives him a distinct advantage.
Because the batter, he still has to be ready at that 8 second mark, but Scherzer can still control that clock time.
Like right down, it's like a quarterback who like snaps it right at the very last moment.
Exactly.
Well, I suppose, you know, we'll see the smart pitchers kind of try to work their way through this, right, to try to find a new advantage. That's one of the great things about sports is that people are always trying to find just that little bit of edge, and it's hard to argue with a guy like Max Scherzer.
Absolutely. So the last bit here, that's, it doesn't really have to do with the pitch clock, but just something that MLB has stated. They're going to be doing a more intense sticky stuff investigation. Now, for Twins fans and Padres fans, this may seem like the investigation is thorough enough. If you remember Karinchak, he had his hair. I mean, he was basically at the salon. Man, the umpire was all up in there. And then Musgrove, if you remember, you would think that they were sanitizing his ear for a piercing, the way that ump was up in his ear. But they're saying that basically pitchers would know when they were going to get checked because it was sort of set after which innings they'd be checked. And now it's going to be a little bit more random. So pitchers really need to be more careful if they are trying to get away with using some additional sticky stuff.
Why wasn't it random before? Like, I mean, this would be kind of like me like handing my students a quiz and saying, all right, I'm going to be gone for the next 20 minutes, but don't you cheat on this quiz. You know, like, come on. Come on, baseball. This is smarter.
Yes. I think that this will be better. I do wonder how many more guys are going to be impacted, because when you read about these articles, it's typically not just one substance, right? It's like sunscreen mixed with the spider track stuff, or not the spider track, but something that like creates that, right?
Sure,
like between their oil and the sunscreen or whatever. I don't know. I'm not a chemist. I got to be honest.
Last thing about the sticky stuff. I love this though. I love the random checks and the running the hand through the hair. Like it just because it's so ridiculous. And yet, yes. Like I know that guys do this. I know that guys find ways around this rule. And like, so it'll be fun. It's fun when people get caught. Right? I'm hoping they catch somebody with this sometime.
There's nothing I like more than catching someone red-handed.
Or slippery-handed or whatever. Sunscreen on his hand. Something like that.
No, sticky-handed.
Sticky-handed. Caught sticky-handed. That's what it is.
The hand caught in the cookie jar is probably the best example. Dan, you know, for the guy who does a lot of our analogies and comparisons and metaphors, you're kind of dropping the ball here.
I am. I'm sorry. Can we move on? Let's move to I was excited about this. The unhealthy and the healthy twins section.
Yes. This is great, Dan. Look at you. Compare, contrast. It's like you're an English teacher.
I'm gesticulating. It's fantastic. All right. So let's talk about the unhealthy twins, because there's a weirdly high number of guys who are like a little bit dinged up. And yet, maybe I think we should be a little bit more concerned about some of these.
Nick Gordon is the most recent one and the one that's sort of new to this list. He was trying to come in on a ball in the infield and he tripped, and he's been diagnosed with a mid to moderate high ankle sprain. And it's really up in the air yet how much this is going to impact his chances to start opening day. Now, granted, I don't know that Nick Gordon is starting opening day anyway, but I mean starting as a bench player. But so I don't know, Dan. They're being pretty they're being pretty cryptic about how bad the injury is, but they said that the x-rays and stuff were negative. There's no structural damage.
Two things. First of all, Rocco has said, like, you know, quote, we don't have bench players, right? We just have players who play several times a week and help us win, right? So Rocco doesn't think of it like that.
I do, Dan.
Well, that's fair. The second thing, all of these, like, I never knew my ankle was so various in its places and degrees of injury to it. Mid to moderate high ankle sprain, but not a mid ankle sprain, not a low ankle sprain. Like, how much do you think about the vastness of your ankle?
I just typically, whenever I hurt a lower body extremity, Dan, I just call it bilateral leg weakness and I move on.
You call it a lower body injury, David. Come on.
Like
thank
hockey,
you for the Joe
yes,
Meyer,
lower body
Meyer shot, though. Yeah. Anyway.
I was going to say, you didn't even catch it? And then
I catch them all. Yeah, but I do. It is a little concerning. Obviously, when we hear about high ankle sprains in football, all the doctors rush in to tell us exactly how many minutes they're going to be out. So, but it is a little bit concerning.
So secondly, you've probably noticed if you've been watching these spring training games, Jose Miranda has been in the lineup, but he hasn't been playing in the field. He's only been DHing. And so I guess this is due to a sore shoulder that he isn't actually throwing currently. So it doesn't impact him batting. And actually, he's done quite well in the spring thus far, but he can't throw. I do wonder, it makes me think, is he worth bringing onto the roster if he can't play third base just as a DH? Because I lean yes, I think.
I do think he's worth having for his bat, but that is concerning because they wanted to rotate the DH. They didn't want to just give it to one guy, and it's a problem to me. I also don't understand how you can swing a bat at the Major League Baseball level and not be able to throw, or vice versa. Like, that's stunning.
It seems odd because the motion is somewhat similar, is it not? I mean, I'm just thinking about like the way that I throw a ball and the way that I swing a bat, but again, he's obviously effective with it, and so maybe they're just being extra cautious and they don't want him putting undue stress upon the shoulder before the season begins.
I think that's probably it.
So then we have to talk about this, Dan. So Jordan Belozovic, he has been a highly touted prospect for the Twins, at least as recently as a couple of years ago. And then he sort of had some disastrous seasons. He's had some injuries that he struggled with. And this season, Dan, it seems like this guy just can't catch a break. Supposedly, Dan, he was out the night before spring training began and he was having a couple of drinks and some random guy just came up and punched him in the face, which required his jaw to be wired shut, and he's not going to be ramped up until mid to late March to start a throwing program. And so the Twins, I think they're a little bit suspect about what actually happened here, because Belozovic had said, I didn't talk to this guy. I didn't see him. It came out of nowhere. And the Twins pretty much immediately sent him down to AAA, like before any other cuts were made.
Yeah, I think that's a statement. And it's funny, like the quote, like, I didn't see it coming. I wasn't paying attention. I was walking and the next thing I know, I got hit. Like, it's like he's yada yada-ing like a punch or something. Like, there's got to be something in there. Like, next thing I know, yada yada yada, a guy has punched me in the face. Like, there has to be... something in between.
There's just no way it happened this way. Also, Dan had actually written on the sheet Seinfeld reference. And so I was like playing in my mind what Seinfeld reference he could be talking about. I assumed it was a Keith Hernandez loogie comment, Dan. That it was just, but no, apparently not. This was a yada yada comment. Well done.
Thank you. And then the other issue that we have here with the twins is that Buxton, Polanco, and Kirilov are still also managing their own mysterious ailments as well.
Yeah, so Buxton is obviously, I think, less concerning, at least to me, because it makes sense that they're being really, really careful with him, and they just want him to be healthy for the season. Polanco, I guess I sort of understand that as well. He's still nursing his knee. And then Kirilov, you referenced an article at Twins Daily, if you want to talk about some of the comparisons that were written about there.
Well, so this was something I didn't know. So the Twins Daily brought up Kirk Gibson, who apparently, and you know, you might know him from his World Series heroics, he apparently had a similar injury where they actually did shave off some of the bone in his wrist as well. And so just, and then he obviously went on and he had a great season, but he did miss some time in the early 80s to that. But then after that, I mean, he was an MVP and obviously hit the home run of the World Series. So I think that's a hopeful sign, but also this is just such an uncommon injury. And it still feels weird to me that you would just shave down part of somebody's bone and just hope that that makes things better.
Yeah, we should reference it was Hans Berkland who wrote that at Twins Daily, just to give him credit.
Yeah, so I'm concerned that we're not seeing more of Alex Kirilov. I know that they're being careful with him, but at some point he's got to play, and it's been a while since this surgery happened.
Yeah, I'm most curious if something nuclear does happen here, where this is silly that I'm starting with Gordon, but let's just assume Gordon can't go, Miranda can only bat, and Buxton, Polanco, and Kirilov aren't ready to start the season. Oof. Now, granted, this is a worst case scenario. I'm trying to paint it in my mind as the worst possible scenario as of right now.
Sure.
Right? Like, barring any other injuries or whatnot. This roster makeup, Dan, looks significantly different. However, some of the depth that the Twins have brought in starts to look a little bit better, knowing that you have guys who can step up in their place. And my big question here, if Polanco can't go, is it possible we see one of these young guys everybody keeps talking about, Brooks Lee or Edward Julian, make a move?
Yeah, there was a good article in The Athletic, I think it was today, by Gleeman, about Julian and how successful he's been. And we've seen twins like Miranda, you know, maybe not in Miranda's first time up with a major league club, but he stuck around the second time. It's amazing how quickly injuries can lead to turnover in positions. You know, we joke about Miguel Sano, but I mean it's a big change. We saw what happened at third base last year with who was even playing third before Miranda? Urshela?
Well, Urshela, yeah.
And you know, and he ended up, I mean, now he's not on the team anymore. So things can change really fast in baseball. And I think Polanco, he will be ushered out at some point here. I don't want it to be this soon, but the Twins do have young guys to come up and maybe replace them.
Yeah, so with that, let's move on to the healthy Twins, Dan. So we've talked about the unhealthy Twins, impacts to the roster, but the healthy Twins, Dan, the rotation seems healthy going into the season, which is the first time since, I'm trying to remember, the last time we went into a season where, yeah, we may not have ace one, ace two, right? But we have a few guys who could have very good seasons. And all of these guys, I know there's a lot of question marks apparently going into the season about whether they'll maintain their health. But as of right now, Maeda, Molly, Gray, Lopez, Ryan, Over, all of those guys are healthy and ready to start the season.
And again, last year, they had four starters, I think, at this point, maybe. I'm not even quite sure if they'd signed Chris Archer at this point. So the fact that they have so many, Bailey Ober looks like in this situation, yeah, he's got to start at AAA because he has options. They'll need them soon enough. It's just ironic that they have these injuries into position players when they could probably absorb one in the starting lineup or in the starting rotation and not miss too much of a beat. I mean, Bailey Ober looked really good at the end of last season. It's encouraging, I guess, in some way to think that he might start the year AAA.
And that's not even to mention Randy Dobnak, Dan.
Well.
Who could very
His
well.
His pitching again, David.
It's happening. And the spring training game, I got to watch a little bit of that game against the Rays. And Randy Dobnak just straight up brick house badonkadonked the ball over to Brooks Lee to record an out. It's hilarious. If you can find that replay, like he legitimately, Dan, just pushes out and that ball just smacks right off his backside.
So if you had to pick one of those, let's say one of the five starters struggles and it's not for injury, though I'm sure they'd probably say it was an injury to then, you know, make some roster space. Which of those five do you think would be most likely to not make the cut here long enough and have Ober come up?
It's a hard question because I don't necessarily see any of them struggling and that being the reason that they get pulled outside of injury. Like, I have a hard time answering that question. I guess the one that I would say probably the most likely would be Maeda, just that he just hasn't fully gotten back to his old form after Tommy John. And that would be the one that seems the most likely if there is going to be someone who's struggling and not due to injury. Due to injury, I think Malley is the biggest question mark for me personally.
I think they are too. And I suppose it's unfair to say to discount injury, right? Because, you know, those guys had, Malley had issues at the end of last season. He only made a few starts for the Twins when they could have used him down the stretch there. So I think you're probably right. You know, we haven't really seen Lopez pitch. I mean, you know, outside of what we've seen in the spring. So I'm excited to see him pitch. You got to hope that Joe Ryan makes the next step. And hopefully Sonny Gray is as good as he was last year. And if those three can really hold down the top of the rotation, I think they can find a way to fill in those fourth and fifth spots.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, Dan Hayes wrote an article over at The Athletic about Sonny Gray and about his ramp up to the season prior to joining the Twins. Because the long and short of it is, Sonny Gray had gone to the Reds, who was his current team at that time, and said, hey, I'm not going to be ready for the season, and I'm going to need a couple of weeks to get ramped up to where I should be. But then he was traded from the Reds to the Twins, but he didn't want to seem like that guy. It's a new organization. He wants to compete. He wants to show them that he's the guy that they traded for. He doesn't say anything to the Twins, and then he gets injured really early on in the season because he wasn't ready yet. And this season, he said he's ramped up. He's ahead of schedule where he would normally be. It's a really fascinating tidbit about sort of the preparation that goes into the season and sort of the mindset of Sonny Gray, knowing that he struggled with injury, probably just due to sort of a lack of proper ramp-up time because he wanted to keep that information to himself.
It is bizarre, right? I mean, because we know these guys are professionals. Like, you would think the professional thing to do would be up front with this team. I mean, what are they going to do? They're not going to cut him. They're not going to get rid of him. I think they'd rather just have the information and just be honest and say what you need, right?
You would think so. And like, yeah, the Twins front office, and it seems like their staff overall, very understanding to players. I think they've really taken the Nelson Cruz method to heart, Dan.
Well, you know, Rocco doesn't want to let those pitchers go too deep into the games to really strain themselves, you know, right? Oh, Sonny, you just give us four. We'll figure out the rest, right? That's okay. Sonny.
So I sort of got into it with some folks on Twitter about this, and this just is just bizarre to me. Like, no, Rocco needs to let guys go deeper into games. And just because you can say, well, last season there was an average innings pitched. No, that's not the question. A quality start is six innings, and that should not be out of the question. I don't care what the league average is. I care what our starters produce.
Absolutely. And you would hope that the Twins can increase that number and get some more quality starts because they have quality starters, right? So yes. These guys, if this is going to be a team that's going to make a run to the playoffs and hopefully within the playoffs, they need some guys to be consistently going six, seven, eight innings. Like, that's just kind of what they need. Great teams have great starting pitching that does that. And if Rocco doesn't think he's got those arms to do it, then this team just isn't good enough to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that their offensive lineup, if they're healthy, they're good to go, Dan. And honestly, I think this rotation could very well be maybe top five in the AL. I think that that's probably the ceiling, right? Like, there's going to be teams that they're just not going to be able to compete against rotation to rotation, and you're going to need some good bounces. But I don't think top five is out of the question for the season.
No, and to come back to where we talked at the beginning of the shift ban, I think they need Kepler and Gallo to figure this out, and they either need to hit the other way or they need to hope the teams aren't going to shift them like that. You know, those are two guys they're counting on to have bounce back seasons, and without that, I do think the lineup becomes a little bit more middling.
Yes, you cannot deny that that would be the case.
Well, David, we've gone through our list here.
I don't know that there's much else to say. I do want to leave us with a little bit of a high note, Dan, before we call it quits for the episode. So MLB.com put together five under-the-radar MVP predictions for 2023. And I guess I would say, going into the season, if you were a betting person, you would probably bet on an MVP for the Twins to be Carlos Correa. There's a lot of pressure on him going into the season. He signed this new contract. Clearly, he's a guy who the Twin Cities are excited about. However, Dan, this article has your guy, Byron Buxton, as the under-the-radar MVP prediction for this season.
I think he has the higher ceiling. Right, because at his very, very peak, the issue obviously is we haven't seen him hang out at the ceiling long enough. But here's the thing. If Byron Buxton is an MVP, the Twins are obviously a playoff team in that scenario, I think, and a dangerous playoff team if Byron Buxton can stay healthy. But even they point out, you know, he's been around so long now, he's been hurt so often. You know, they even say he always, always, always misses time due to injury. Maybe this is the year he finally does not.
Odds are he's got to have a healthy season, right? Like, I guess I don't know how the odds work in this regard, but it does seem like there should be a season where he doesn't get injured. It just seems like there should be.
And when that season happens, that is a great Twins team. And that's why they signed him to that contract. And I think just because functionally that's where the Twins have put their chips, right? They've put them on the fact that Byron Buxton, one of these 7 years on this contract, is going to have a fantastic MVP season.
So I think that's a good place to leave it, Dan, on these high notes, thinking about Byron Buxton being named MVP for 2023. But a couple of production notes here. So we'll probably have one more episode before our season prediction episode, which will drop on opening day. And then I think it's good, Dan, that we prep the listeners right now. So Dan Thompson has been very dedicated to this podcast, as have I, and we try and have an episode for every single series that the Twins produce. And we've missed a couple, typically due to illness or travel restrictions, things like that. However, to start this 2023 baseball season, the first three episodes of the season, I will not be with Dan Thompson. I will be with Andrew Hoags Hogensen, because Dan Thompson has decided a trip to Chile is more important than the podcast, Dan.
Chile. I think it's pronounced Chile.
Pretentious people say it that way. Yes, yes, you're right.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, David. That's when our spring break is. So that's when we're going to go. And I could not justify bringing an extra suitcase with my podcasting equipment. So you're just going to have to go without me, I think. But Hoags is going to do a great job, as he always does. And you guys can take all the kind of shots of me you want, because I will be literally across the world. You won't be able to reach
me. We will, Dan. And like, honestly, no, I hope you have a great time. I'm a little bit disappointed. I'm very happy to have Hoags available because, like you said, he's a great fill-in. He does great work. I'm excited about those shows. But I thought we should prep the folks now.
Sure.
So they're not taken aback when they tune in and it's not David and Dan. And then one last production note. We've talked about it a little bit on the first couple episodes of the season, but we have opened up a Patreon if you want to be part of the Puckett's Picks for this season for the listeners or support the show. Feel free to find us on Patreon. You can find a link in the podcast description.
All right, David. Well, thanks for mentioning all that. I guess I'll send us out while I have the chance here. Well, folks, if you like what you hear, please tell a friend. You can follow us on Twitter at Men for the Win. You can find our Men for the Win Facebook page as well. Make sure you've subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube so you're notified when new episodes are available. And if you could leave us a rating, that would be great. If you'd like to support the show further, you can find us on Patreon. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Twins. That'll wrap up another episode of Men for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kuvis and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Thanks so much for listening, and as always, go Twins!